Thanks, Brooke. My name is Carrie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group, and I am still currently living in the maintenance and the growth of 10, 11, and 12. So last week we left off on page 38, which was about halfway through, more about alcoholism. And so I think it's a perfect place to have kind of organically stopped because more about alcoholism, well, along with the doctor's opinion and even some of Bill's story, is so repetitive. And I went over a little bit about it, why it's repetitive last week with the whole like body and mind, mind and body, mentally and physically and mentally, all over and over and over again. And they give all these examples, right? Last week we read about the jaywalker, which is the perfect analogy. It's the perfect illustration for us, at least for me, right? And then where we left off is yet another place on the bottom of page 38 where it talks about that, however intelligent we may have been in other respects where alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. And I think that that's still not good enough. So they're going to continue to reiterate. And so why I said it was a good place to leave off is because halfway through the reiteration, if we do the whole thing in one sitting, it starts to get redundant, right? So, and I love that. I'm acting kind of sarcastic about it, but I love it because I needed it. I needed that redundancy. It's what offered me the clarity, right? Because somebody like me, I need to hear the same thing over and over again before it finally sinks in. So I'm going to start on that bottom paragraph on 38. Some of you are thinking, well, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. Not to me, right? We admit that we've had some of these symptoms, but we've not gone to the extreme you fellows did, nor are we likely to, for we understand ourselves so well after what you've told us that such things just can't happen again. We have not lost everything in life through drinking, and we certainly don't intend to. Thanks for the information. That was me. When I came into AA, I didn't look like my husband did when he came into AA. I didn't look like some of the women that I sponsor, right? I didn't come out of the psych ward. I didn't come out of the hospital. I didn't come out of, and so for me, it's like, well, okay, so you tell me that I have an allergy to alcohol. All right, that makes sense. So I don't need this thing. Now that I know that I can't drink, then I just won't drink, right? And I think that's what this is setting us up for. So this next story, because they want to emphasize it and reemphasize it and drive it home more, it says, oh, wait, I'm one paragraph off. So let me read that next paragraph. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people, right? Because if I'm a non-alcoholic and I just have the physical allergy, well, then I'm never going to drink again, right? Like I mean, who would if you wake up with puke on yourself, not knowing where that your car is? Any normal person would just probably not drink again. Not me. So that being true of certain non-alcoholic people who through drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time are able to stop or moderate because their bodies and brains have not been as damaged as ours were. Now, and it's talking about the heavy drinker again. And notice how it uses that same word, heavy drinker. Now, I realize that some big book thumpers like to call that problem drinking or problem drinkers. And they say, oh, I'm not just a problem drinker. If alcohol was my problem, then I wouldn't be an alcoholic. Well, that's not in alignment with this literature. The literature, every time it uses the word problem drinker, it's talking about the real alcoholic, right? It's talking about the person who has a problem stopping on their own willpower. So the word that they're looking for, these whatever, big book thumpers. And I can say that because I used to be one. Now I'm a big book literalist, right? And it says it's a heavy drinker. The hard drinkers, the heavy drinkers, they can stop or moderate. So, but the actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is the point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize to smash home upon the alcoholic readers as this, as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let us take another illustration, right? Because that's what this whole chapter is about. So Fred, this is Fred's story. Fred's a partner in a well-known accounting firm. His income is good. He's a fine home, is happily married, and the father of promising children, of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearances, he is a stable, well-balanced individual, yet he is an alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. Because lots of non-alcoholics do that, right? So the doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. And remember, I think it's on page 7 of Bill's story when Bill finally makes up his mind that, well, I've written lots of sweet promises, but this time I meant business. And so I did. And he said he was going to have not even one drink. And then the next day he came home drunk. Shortly after he came home drunk, this is the same thing that happened with Fred. He made up his mind to stop drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he couldn't do so. In spite of his character and his standing, so Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. We told him what we knew of alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge that he had acquired, would keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. We heard no more of Fred for a while. One day we were told that he was back in the hospital, and this time quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told us was most instructive, for here was a chap absolutely convinced that he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all other concerns, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. Let him tell you about it. So here's Fred's story. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and frankly, I didn't believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I'd rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink. That's a highlight if I've ever heard one, right? Because this is driving home yet again that the insanity only comes as a before the drinking, right? It's not the craving that comes as a result of the drinking. So the subtle insanity or the obsession or whatever you're going to call it is what happens before the first drink. The insane part is that I take the drink stone cold sober. So, but I was confident it wouldn't happen to me for what I had learned. I reasoned I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows, that I had been usually successful in licking my other problems. Again, this is another reiteration of normal in every aspect, except for when it comes to combating liquor, right? We highlighted the last 5 places in the book that it says this exact same thing up until page 44. This is all we're going to hear over and over again. I would therefore be successful where you men had failed, right? Because he was successful at everything else. He was a fine man. He put his mind to do something and he did it. So why would he think that this is anything different? I felt I had every right to be self-confident, that it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. In this frame of mind, I went about my business for a time. All was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks, and I began to wonder if maybe I hadn't made such a hard work of a simple matter. One day, I went to Washington to present on some accounting evidence, to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. So remember, like, unlike Jim, the car salesman, right, who some people I've heard say something along the lines of, well, he was working, he had to work for a firm that he once owned, right? So maybe that's a resentment. Maybe that resentment made him drink. Well, then what is Fred's excuse, right? Because Fred doesn't have an excuse. He said that neither, he didn't have any problems or worries. My business came off well, he says. I was pleased and I knew my partners would be too. In fact, listen to this. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. Now, remember what I said last week about the italics in this chapter. Remember, all of the italics mean that is this insanity that precedes the first drink. The alcoholic insanity in this chapter is going to be in italics. So this is where it gets insane. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. Notice how the words "that was all" is in insanity too, is in italics as well, because that's insane for an alcoholic to think that they're just going to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. Nothing more. Again, still in italics, because that's still insane for him to think after everything he knew about himself, right? Now, I ordered a cocktail in my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. Now, notice that when he's ordering more cocktails, it's no longer in italics because it's not demonstrating the insanity. Now it's back to the physical factor, right? It's back to the physical phenomenon of craving, where once you take a drink, that drink takes me. And that's what's happening to Fred here. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. Then I returned to the hotel, and it struck me that a highball would be fine before going to bed. So I stepped into the bar and I had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty the next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being on an airplane bound for New York and finding a friendly taxi cab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. There it is again, mental and physical. As soon as I regained my ability to think, is that my mic? Are you guys hearing that? Okay. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Now, here comes the italics again. So it's going to demonstrate some more insanity. Not only had I been off guard, I made no fight whatever against the first drink. Insane. This time, I had not even thought of the consequences at all. He couldn't even think that drink through, right? He couldn't even recollect the disaster of even a week or a month ago, right? Isn't that what it says said earlier on? This time I had no thought of the consequences at all. That is insanity. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. Again, not in highlights, because that's the phenomenon of craving. That's the physical. So the physical allergy is not going to be in highlights, only the subtle insanity that precedes the first drink. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophetized that if I had an alcoholic mind, there's a highlight, alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. they said they had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I learned of alcoholism didn't occur to me at all. I knew from that moment I had an alcoholic mind. There's another time that it says alcoholic mind. So those of you who are highlighting along, both of those times that it says alcoholic mind, go ahead and highlight because we're going to take a brief intermission at the end of this paragraph and jump ahead for a sec. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. Those strange mental blank spots, right? Not a cloud on the horizon. It was the end of a perfect day. No resentment. Strange mental blank spot. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then, and it was a crushing blow. So alcoholic mind is described pretty thoroughly and pretty often in the first 44 pages, because obviously if you're on your first step, if you're suffering from alcoholism, the alcoholic mind is the problem, right? And I don't know about you, but I've heard well-meaning members of AA who will be talking about their alcoholic mind well after recovery from alcoholism, as if we're different than other human beings, right? And the difference is the alcoholic mind is the one that drinks no matter what and might be normal in every aspect, except for when it comes to combating alcohol, except for when it comes to liquor. And so when we go to page 101, because right now we're on the first step, let's jump to the 12th step, because as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing the work that 2 through 11 take, then by the time I get to page 101 and it's talking about this, you know, alcoholic mind not being able to handle seeing bottles, and that people have to hide their bottles if we come into their houses, and we must not think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that that is not necessarily so. Now, by the time I have achieved and have acquired and been gifted those 10th step promises, which we will get to, and the problem has been removed, right, through the process of the 12 steps, and that problem doesn't exist for me anymore, the next line is, we meet these conditions every day, and an alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. And if that's the case, then maybe I need to go back to step one. Maybe I've missed something, right? Because the whole process of steps 2 through 11 is to get rid of that problem so that I no longer have an alcoholic mind. And I realize that what the well-meaning members of AA say when they refer to their alcoholic mind, they're not referring to maybe, some of them are referring to the fact that they can't drive past a liquor store, you know, or go down the liquor aisle, and bless them, because I remember how bad that was, and it's no joke. And hopefully one day, you know, they too can recover. You know, God could and would if he were sought. But I'm talking about people who maybe have recovered, and they think that the alcoholic mind is a good thing to blame on your road rage or your all of these human defects, right, that we all have, not just that are unique to the alcoholic. But this book describes where it says, you know, if you still can't be around liquor, you might still have an alcoholic mind. That's not saying that the alcoholic mind is, it's just talking about liquor. It's just talking about the obsession being lifted, right? Because these steps, although 10, 11, and 12 allow me to grow along spiritual lines, I'm never going to be recovered from my humanism. And thank God, because that would be really boring. But I do get to recover from alcoholism. So back on page 42, two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much. Remember, this guy's in the hospital, right? And they asked me if I thought myself alcoholic and if I was really licked this time, right? They didn't ask him, do you want to quit drinking just for today? Just one day at a time. No, they said, if you're, you know, they want to know, are you done this time? Are you really licked? I had to concede to both propositions. They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as I had exhibited in Washington was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. The process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. Then they outlined, this is the first time in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that it's gonna mention spirituality, the spiritual answer. So twofold, right? Body and mind, mind and body. And when it starts to mention the solution, it's always gonna be spiritual. It's gonna be a spiritual answer, a spiritual remedy, a spiritual solution. It's always going to talk about the spiritual answer. So that's the program, and the program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I had only been a nominal church member, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow, but the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved. And in fact, it proved to be. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. Wait a minute. You know, I heard somewhere that acceptance was the answer to all my problems. Oh, wait, that's in the back of the book. That's just somebody's story. I get confused sometimes with the program of action in the front of the book, and then, you know, the stories in the back, which is the stories are just like speaker meetings. So quite as important that this discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of life was by no means a bad one, but I would not change its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it even if I could. Fred's story speaks for itself. We hope it strikes home to thousands like him. He had felt only the first nip of the ringer. Most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before they really commence to solve their problems. Many doctors and psychiatrists agree with our conclusion. One of these men, staff member at a world-renowned hospital, recently made this statement to some of us. What you say about the general hopelessness of the average alcoholic's plight is, in my opinion, correct. As two of you men whose stories I've heard, there's no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless apart from divine help. The alcoholic of the hopeless variety, right? 100% hopeless. If you had offered yourselves as patients at this hospital, I would not have taken you if I had been able to avoid it. That's got to be hard to hear, right? I mean, that means hopeless, because what doctor wants to treat somebody that you don't have the answer for, that you can't just write a prescription for, that you have to say, I have nothing. I got nothing. You're hopeless and you're going to die. The end. And have a nice day. Like, what doctor would want to have that conversation, right? I mean, or I guess he could tell them to accept it, and that acceptance was the answer to their problem. But That's not what I would do if I was a doctor. People like you are too heartbreaking. Though not a religious person, I have profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there is virtually no other solution. Once more, as if they didn't reiterate this so many times, they're going to close the chapter by saying, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So, the moral of the chapters that we've read up until we agnostics, which is where we are now, chapter four, is I'm screwed. Right? Steps one, two, and three, I've heard it said, I'm screwed, right? I can't. Maybe he can, and then I think I'll let him, or it, or she, or whatever you want to call your higher power, right? So the last paragraph of step one in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is this first paragraph on page 44. And this is the last paragraph that I take the new people that I'm working with that just came into the rooms who have not yet identified as alcoholic or not. This is the last paragraph I take them to go through that qualifying process. No, I'm not there to qualify them and to tell them if they're alcoholic or not. I'm there to help them to qualify, and I'm there to convince myself if I'm going to work with them if they are an alcoholic or not. Because if not, if they can quit drinking on their own and their problem is something other than alcohol, then I can help them to find the help that they need. So here's the so page 44 chap page 44 paragraph one, page 21 paragraph two, and the doctor's opinion after the five types of alcoholics. Those are the qualifying pages that you can bring a newcomer to or someone who's having trouble deciding if they're alcoholic or not. Those are the three places that are my go-tos, because they have questions that are pretty clear cut. So here's the most clear of all of those. So it starts out, I just love the way this book is read written so much. So it starts out in the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Like, that's all they've done for the past 44 pages, plus the entire doctor's opinion, right? It's almost sarcastic. And here it is. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or not and, right, Valerie? When you are drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Now, if that's an and, you're definitely alcoholic. That's just my two cents. But yeah, so if that be the case, right? If you have the physical, which is if you honestly, if when you honestly want to, you can't quit entirely, is the mental. Right, the mental part, the mind, because I take a drink, it's stone cold sober, right? That's I don't I've lost the power of control. Or if when drinking, once I take a drink, I can't stop, right? I have little I have no control, little control over the amount you take, and you're probably alcoholic. Those are the two parts. This is the first time in the book they're putting those two parts together in a descriptive manner. And they're saying, if that's the case for you, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And now we're going to be talking about the spiritual answer, the spiritual remedy, the spiritual solution. And the spiritual answer and the spiritual remedy and the spiritual solution is not just a solution for alcoholism. I believe that anybody with any amount of, you know, anybody with any spiritual malady, and if your spiritual malady is taking you to the refrigerator or to the drug dealer's house or to the casino, there are tons of other 12-step fellowships out there with the same spiritual answer, with the same steps 2 through 12, or sorry, 2 through 11, because steps 1 and 12 are the only two that are 100% about alcohol and alcoholism. So I'm not going to go into super detail with We Agnostics, and I'm going to tell you why. We are going to kind of go through it. What I call the instructional highlights. This is the only chapter that I don't take all the women that I sponsor through word for word. I do take the women I sponsor through the first 103 pages of the big book, which is the 12 steps, word for word, line by line, page by page, with the exception of We Agnostic. And I'm going to tell you why. And I'm not suggesting that you don't. I'm suggesting that someone like me that, and maybe you guys have noticed, I can be, I get excited, right? I get excitable. I have face expressions. I am, what does cartoon characters do? I'm forgetting the word. But it's like, I'm animated, I guess. And I can't help that, especially when I'm passionate about something. And so when we go through a chapter that is designed to, a step really, that is designed to bring me to find a power greater than myself, I don't want my belief or my non-belief, whichever the case may be, to rub off on you through the tone of my voice, through what I say, through my examples and my experiences, because I'm here to help you to have your own experience as someone I'm taking through the book. And a lot of people can go through this chapter, no problem, without, I just would hate to affect or alter the women that I sponsor with my own conception of a higher power. I was really fortunate and lucky that I had really good, a good example of this with my sponsor who I have now. My first sponsor was not as great of an example, but the sponsor I have now, and I've had Beth for probably 12 years, maybe 13 years around there. When we first sat down to do work, we met together across the table, at Jackson's Corner for the first 3 years, every week for an hour and a half, every single week without failure, without exception. And we went through this work, right? And we did the steps, and I mean, it didn't take us 3 years, but it was 3 years before I noticed that she was wearing a pennant around her neck one day. And it shocked me because of what the pennant was. And I kind of was thrown for a loop, and I asked her about it. And she quickly took and put it under her shirt. And she said, oh, I'm sorry. I usually am more careful than that when I'm with my sponsees or in meetings. And I'm like, my whole world, like this woman, and I'm not going to say what the pennant was or whatever, but like when I was shocked, because I would have never guessed in a million years, she confirmed, she said, well, Carrie, that's my business and that's my higher power. I'm not here to tell you who my higher power is. I'm here to help you to get better acquainted with yours. And so it was the best example that I could ever imagine, right? So I don't have an excuse. I can go through this chapter, especially in a big book study or whatever. And I definitely go through the instructional highlights with my sponsees. But one of the tools that I've acquired that I use with people who I'm taking through this work is I will actually ask them to do a book study with on this chapter with another person who might be of their same age in AA or of their same sobriety or maybe a litter mate or another person that I'm sponsoring who's around the same place in the steps, and they can study it together. And as you know, and I know that we're equals, and I don't mean that a sponsor isn't an equal, but a sponsor is a leader. And the women that I sponsor, some of them will look up to me, and I just don't want to affect them in that way. And so it's not wrong or bad for me to take them through. I'm just very animated and and passionate. So with that, I am going to just touch on a couple of my highlights that start on page 46. So on page 46, it says, much to our relief, and this is the last paragraph, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God, which is, again, why I let my sponsees have their own experience and not mine. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make an approach and to effect a contact with him, again, or her, or whatever the case may be. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlining the totality of things, we begun to be possessed of a new sense of power. Highlight that SH right there, because that these are the second step promises, by the way, if anybody is curious. We begun to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So the promises of step two are contingent upon moving forward, right? Now, a new sense of power, but I thought I lost my power, right? I mean, I had no power of choice in drink. I woke up every morning and told myself that I was never going to drink again. I swore it off forever. And I was not in denial. I was in alcoholic insanity. I mean, you could have hooked me up to a lie detector test and I would have passed, saying I was never going to touch another drop for as long as I lived. And I would have passed that lie detector test. I had no power of choice. And this is somewhat controversial, but I believe today I do have a power. A new sense of power. And throughout the second step promises, the third step promises, and the fifth step promises, and definitely the 10th step promises, it continues to reiterate that a new power flowed in as we get through these steps. And by the end of the process, by the end of the successful consummation of this process in big book language, I will have the power to make the choice not to drink. Now, it's not my power, right? It's like a light, a lamp. I have a lamp by me and it's plugged into the wall. It has no power by itself, you know, even though it has a light bulb, but I have a new power, right? I know where to plug in. And that's part of the second step promises. So on page 47, this is the second step. And it can be reconciled with page 12 of Bill's story, right? Because that's where we get all of the steps. So in the middle of the page, it says, we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Here we go. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is even willing to believe, we empathetically make sure, assure him that he's on his way. This has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, highlight cornerstone, a wonderful, effective spiritual structure can be built. Now, it's taking us to an appendix again, but we did that last week. Remember how I said that there's several places in the book that take us to appendix to the spiritual experience? This is one of them, and we're not going to go there because we already did that last week. But for this paragraph, there's a couple of things that I want to point out in that second step. So first of all, it's reconciled on page 12, right? Because on page 12 of Bill's story, and it's in italics, right in the middle of the page on page 12, it says it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. And when I first looked up on the wall at the steps in the short form, because again, you know, if your only understanding of the steps is from what you've read off the wall, you probably have an off the wall understanding of the steps. And I did have an off the wall understanding of the steps. I looked at the steps and for some reason I read step two, which actually reads, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. What I read is came to believe in, not came to believe that a power greater than myself, came to believe in God, period. That's what I saw on the wall. And I'm like, oh, hell no, right? And so I'm really grateful that that's not what it says. And that's not what the actual step instructions are either. So what the step instructions could have very easily said, and in the original manuscript, it is different. And thank goodness for Hank P and Jimmy B, and I'm not saying last names, because all of those angry atheists and all of the people who stood flat-footed, right, that were there so that we could, that this program's doors could be wide enough, they put this extra language in. So let me read you what this could have said. Do I now believe that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, we empathetically assure him that he's on his way. But it doesn't say that. You see the parts I skipped. Is the two places, not once, but twice, does it say, or is even willing to believe, right? Do you believe? No. Well, okay. Are you willing to believe? No. Okay. Are you willing to be willing to believe? Okay. Right? We can meet you where you are. We can meet you where you are. This literature is easy enough to do that. So the reason I told you to put the cornerstone in there is because to highlight the cornerstone is that Bill's kind of writes these steps in a structural manner, right? And what we're building, what we're starting to build, is the triumphant arch in which we will walk, pass through to freedom. And that's in step three. Step one was upon a foundation of complete willingness, right? Not complete honesty. Step one is a foundation of complete willingness is the foundation stone. Now, my step one later on, because it'll also say that willingness is the foundation of step 12, but little cheat, little forward thinking in the book, my step one is somebody else's step 12. And somebody else's step 12 is how I got my step one. Right? That's how this thing works. You got to give it away to keep it. You got to pass it on. And so step one and step 12 is the foundation. And step two is the cornerstone. And it's funny because I have a little diagram and it's not AA conference approved literature, so I won't post it or show it right now. But if those of you who want it, because I'm a picture person, I'm a visual person, I'm a color person. It's even in colors and it's really cool. If you want me to text it to you, please just shoot me, you know, a text requesting it. My phone number is in my my box, but, and I'll text that to you. But what's cool about it is, you know, it says in step one time in Bill's story, it says upon a foundation of complete willingness. And there's only one foundation in this picture that I'll text you. Well, then it says two times, in step two, it uses the word cornerstone two times. And there's two cornerstones in this, you know, and then there's one keystone, which is in step three, which we'll get to, and then it'll show the rest of the steps after the arch, right? Which is the path to freedom, the rest of the steps. And so it helps me to work with my newcomers who are like me and visual. And so if you would like that tool, 541-788-7276 is my phone number. I'll say that one more time, 541-788-7276. Please don't edit that out, Bob, because I don't mind having people call me even in 10 years from now. I will still be here. So with that, we will go through the rest of the chapter, my highlights on the rest of the chapter next week. Thank you guys for having me.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.